Show me the way. I'm already having fun. This is episode 13, The Seller's Journey and Its Author. In this episode, we talk with Denise Logan about her career and expertise, including her exciting book, The Seller's Journey. Denise brings a dimension that I've wanted for so very, very long, to have someone come in and talk about the psychological side of a succession plan, a monetization of a business, a merger and acquisition. So I am so excited to have her on board. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain, LLC, about business succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exits. I'm your host, Dave Sider. Joining me on today's show is Denise Logan, author and advisor to businesses. Denise will share her experiences in helping clients through succession planning and the ultimate exit for owners in their company. And I hope she will help me with the issue of deal fatigue that plagues all sellers going through the monetization process. Denise, finally, welcome to the show. So glad to have you here.
I'm so glad to be with you today, Dave. Thanks for having me.
I am so happy you're here. Let's start out with the very beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in a small town in Ontario, Canada, which is
really?
Why I live. Yeah. And that is why I live in Scottsdale, Arizona, because no matter how much sun rains down, we do not shovel it.
Well, I grew up in Minnesota. And I'm a hockey player. And so I'm always fascinated by anything Canadian. I get it. I've been to Toronto in the winter. I've been in Toronto in the winter in a snowstorm. So I get it. How did you get from the greater province of Ontario to Scottsdale in Arizona?
Yeah. So obviously I'm a weather-driven character at this point in my life. But I went, part of the time I went to college in Michigan, and then I finished at the University of Texas.
Wow.
And my undergrad degree is in social work. Well, I'd hate to go all the way back to the beginning. I think it helps. Because my early life, I was a mental health professional with two interesting, you'll see why they fit in here, two different specialties. One is work and financial disorders. So people who are addicted to work and money.
Wow.
And the other specialty is thanatology. That is the study of death and dying.
Wow. Okay, we got to stop. We got to go back and ask questions on this. Hold it, because this is interesting, because my daughter majored in psychology and got her master's in social work, and she never mentioned this stuff to me as well. So the first one is being addicted to money and business. Break that down.
Yeah.
That is utterly fascinating.
I'm going to give you a little more of the flow, and then I'll come back and tell you how it fits together, because I think it's relevant.
Thank you. Let's do that.
So eventually, I became a lawyer. And I always say, oh, for heaven's sake, don't you think I could have used that good mental health work to keep myself from becoming a lawyer?
Lawyer. Thank you very much.
And I built a law practice. And when we reached a pretty large size, I realized I am sick of practicing law.
Now, where were you when this happened?
In Washington, D.C.
Now, how do you get from
There's
Toronto.
A migratory pattern. Do you want the full scoop? So it was, went to college in Texas. I went to law school in Los Angeles, ended up in Washington, D.C. And after almost 15 years of practicing law, I realized I hate it. I would rather put a stick in my eye than go to work one more day. Mm-hmm. And I did an ugly, choppy exit from my business. Mm. I merged with a large Baltimore firm, got rid of my house, and bought a motorhome, and I took off. For what I thought would be 6 months to clear my head and turned into several years where I traveled all over North and Central America. That could be a whole separate fun conversation with a beverage that we should do.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there will be a movie coming out next week, and I am the executive producer. I just want to go on out on the line. That is, I mean, yeah, we're going to have to do a whole new interview just on that.
That'll be super fun, and I will welcome it. But I came off the road, and I joined a friend's business who was preparing it for sale. And after 10 years of trying to sell this business, we had taken it to the market 3 times, and he was unable to let go. And I thought, this is an interesting dichotomy, because you could be me and wait too long and be ready to give my business away. Or you could be him and go too early and not be able to pull the trigger and make the exit. So I left and did a research study to try to figure out, why do business owners get stuck? And how do we help them navigate the emotional obstacles that they get stuck on? Then I wrote a book about it. And over the course of the last more than a decade, I've worked one-on-one with business owners and their advisors to help them navigate those obstacles that otherwise can crush a deal or leave an owner feeling filled with regret on the other side. And I speak at about 70 conferences a year about these topics, the psychology of business owners and what makes it hard for them to let go, and how when we focus on work, money, and meaning, we end up with a much greater legacy from our life than when we focus on only one.
The 3 big bullet points again for everyone listening.
The 3 bullet points: work, money, and meaning.
Yep.
When they come together, we actually have a much greater, valuable life. And it is a legacy that is worth living. And there's a whole other experience that I offer called the Legacy Dinner. There are a whole bunch of little interesting pieces that we can tack onto. But the reason I wanted to give you kind of the path of where I started as a mental health professional and how I've come to this place, I think it might not look like an ordinary path. In many ways, I am doing now for others what I needed someone to do for me when I owned my business. Because I knew for several years before I actually exited that I needed to exit.
Can you drill down a little bit on that? What does that mean? Because, well, in my book, I don't remember the chapter, but there is a former football coach for Kansas State University, Bill Snyder, who said on some interview that when it creeps into his head that you're thinking about retiring, you need to retire. Hmm. And that was his trigger, and he did it. Now, he came back, but you know, he did not procrastinate. And I don't, that's not a criticism of you. Right now, I've got clients right now that are struggling, you know, trying to figure out, in friends, in relationships, and, you know, referral sources. It's like, I need to do something, ellipses.
Yeah. So here's the truth. Every one of us will leave our business at some point, voluntarily or involuntarily. And many of us reach a point where we know it's time, but either we don't know what comes next. I refer to those folks as the what's nexters.
Mm-hmm.
Or we don't have support from the people around us to step off the path that we're already on. So I had a successful firm with lots of employees, and we were busy, busy, and I was unsatisfied. Mm-hmm. And I was burning out. And what I found, I was in my middle 30s at the time, and I realized the people around me really had no tolerance for that. They would say things like, well, just go on vacation or get a boat.
Yeah. Get a dog, do something. Right. Yeah.
Right. That. Yeah. And periodically, in an effort to try to extract myself from my business, I would hire a consultant to help me. And typically, what I heard from those consultants were, oh, but you've got a great business going here. All we need to do is tweak this and that and double down. And in 5 years or 10 years, you'll really have something that you'll want to sell. But I was already done
there
inside. Yeah. And what I realize is often consultants or the advisors around business owners aren't listening fully to what is being said. And certainly people around me, there was this expectation, like, there are lots of people who would give anything to be you. How mm-hmm. could you walk away? So sometimes we think about business transitions as only happening when a business owner reaches a particular milestone, either in age or revenue or something else. But I know from my own history as an owner, and certainly from the owners that I've worked with, that sometimes this transition comes early, not late. And it's about how we create the conditions for that. Because one of the things that I think is really unique about business owners is that we get so much more from our work than just money and financial security. So can I tell you a story of a client?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be important. You're making me also very cognizant of a saying I learned from a guy by the name of Dan Sullivan, who owns the Strategic Coach.
Yeah.
And he said, money is always a byproduct of your goals and your drive. He said it a little bit differently, but that's my interpretation. Don't go after the money. Go after, you know, what motivates you, what drives you. You know, be the best at what you are. Go into your unique ability. I sense it's in part where you're driving or helping to guide your owners, in a manner of speaking. But yeah, let's go to your example. That would be great. Your story.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you about a client named Michael. Michael was in his middle 30s. He owned a software company, and he mm-hmm. was set to net $16 million on the other side of this sale. Pretty good chunk of change for that time in his life. And the deal was cooking along, and all of a sudden he realized, wait, who am I going to hang out with? All my buddies have jobs. I'm going to sell this business, and what will I do? So he was out shooting pool with his best friend one night, and he said mm-hmm. to him, hey, I don't know who I'm going to hang out with. To which his friend replied, boo-hoo, dude, I wish I had your sad little $16 million problem. You know, that's a common refrain from people. What happened mm-hmm. for Michael is that the problem didn't go away. Instead, he now felt ashamed because he was like, oh, this is not a problem that people can relate to. I shouldn't be talking about this. And so that problem went underground and started acting out in his deal like little mushrooms popping up from underground. All of a sudden, he didn't like a deal term. Maybe he might have wanted more money. There was conflict that started showing up. Because instead of Michael being able to talk about what was really happening for him, which is, my business gives me a lot more than just money. We're going to solve the money issue, but there are a lot of other things that are going to show up. Unless the advisor's in a transaction, and I'm thinking bankers, lawyers, financial advisors, CPAs, all of the consultants who are around them, unless we create the kind of conditions where an owner can talk to us about what is happening emotionally, they will frame things in terms of money and transactional details.
I can give you about 25 different scenarios that would support that notion. I could think of one scenario I've dealt with a few years ago where I just don't think they can ever sell because he's just too closely aligned to the business. There won't be anything afterwards.
Oh, you're like my straight man here today, Dave. I love it when you give me a lead like that because—
No respect at all. Hey.
So let's talk about what Michael was really struggling with. Okay. Great. Because I think this is what lots of owners struggle with. And it's certainly what I myself struggled with. Work provides more for us than just money and financial security. So here's the question I ask every owner, and I'm going to encourage listeners at home. What does work provide for you other than money and financial security? I'll just ask it again. What does work provide for you other mm-hmm. than money and financial security? Because the sale of the business is going to take care of that part of it. And we should be able to come up with 15 distinct answers to that question. Mm-hmm. Now, some of your listeners are like, 15? I don't know, other than money and like, what does work provide? So let's play a little brainstorm game here, Dave.
Please.
What does work provide for you? What are some of the things you get from your work?
Consistency, drive, purpose, direction, stability. I get an adrenaline rush in dealing with people. I like the intellectual challenge of the law. I think the other things that help me is working collaboratively on projects. I like feeding people. I like bringing in business and feeding people. That's a nourishment thing for me. But, you know, those would be some of my, I think, highlights.
Right. And I think your listeners, hopefully some of those hit for them. But also, here are some of the ones that I hear. And they are unique to the answers that come for people will be unique. Some of them that I hear are things like structure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Yep. It provides structure to our day and our week and our year. A place to go.
Right.
You know, during the pandemic, weren't we all thinking, when can I get out of this house? And I have news for you. Your spouse was thinking that too. When yeah. are you going to get out of the house? It also provides intellectual stimulation, friendship,
mm-hmm.
a place where our wisdom is valued,
mm-hmm.
the thrill of the chase, the close of the deal.
It completes me, so to speak.
Right? But also things that we don't always like to admit to ourselves.
Right, right.
Things like power.
Mm-hmm.
At work, you say you want something done, and it probably gets done. I don't know about your life, but for me, not so much at home. Just because I said I want something done doesn't mean it's going to get done.
Well, and in that setting, to your point, in that setting, there's power, but there's also control that you don't have maybe otherwise in your life. I interrupted you, please.
No, it's fine. You know, absolutely. There are other things that we don't always like to talk about. Like, it's the place I get to bully.
Yep.
I'm not a bully, but I worked with a family business where what I noticed was the stepmother continued to disrupt the transition between father and son. And once I caught sight of that dynamic, I was like, what is that? And then I realized the father was a bully, and he was bullying lots of people at work, including his son. And the stepmother was quite clear that bullying behavior was not going to stop if he left the business, and she was going to become the primary target. And so,
interesting,
right? What we're doing is we're only talking to the business owner about what's happening, but there are lots of people who are being impacted by this transition. So if we just stick with this question of what work provides for us other than money and financial security, we start to map what these are. And the reason I choose 15 is not because it's a magical number, but the first 3, 4, or 5 that come up are pretty easy. The next handful that come up are we're digging a little deeper. Those last 3, 4, or 5, those are the ones that we don't even like to admit to ourselves, let alone to someone else. And those are the ones that can derail our transaction.
You know, to your point, I use the analogy with planning where, you know, you can help people plan. If they've never done a plan before, I will guarantee them that they will beat their plan if they go through the process I go through. And, you know, I've been right every time. They go, how do you know that? I go, I don't know that. Here's what I do know. At the end of the day, what if you've never done a plan before and you lay it out with measurables and a timeline and a goal, you'll hit it because it's low hanging fruit. It's been there the whole time. it's the stuff that's behind us that really we need to deal with is the hard stuff. So it's usually the second and third plan. And, you know, to your point, you know, the stuff that comes out that are very apparent, why you go to work or why you're going through the trepidation that you are, there's something way in the background that, you know, we'd like to, you know, deal with. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. As an attorney, and you probably remember from your own experience, but also as a healthcare professional, but also helping people in this industry, they want to talk to somebody about it. The only question is it you?
Yeah. And do we make ourselves aware enough of what could be going on to ask the right questions? Because often the question that I hear an advisor ask an owner is, so what are you going to do with yourself after you sell your business? And their answer is often golf and travel. Can we agree that's not a plan?
Correct.
That is not a plan. What that usually signifies is the business owner is so consumed with the running of the business and this part of their life that that is a distant thought. Who will I be? What will I do with myself? And too often, advisors haven't done that work for themselves. So they don't know that answer for you, right? If I have done, and this is what I say to advisors, I'm like, take this question and ask it to yourself and really get detailed. What are your things that you get from work? That will help you to be present with your client, but also when you get a big sack of cash, it doesn't make those other needs go away.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
So where will we get those needs met outside of work? So let's just use intellectual stimulation. Where else will you get that outside of your business? And not just one place, but probably two, three, or four places. And we start mapping that out. Where can that happen? Where will your friendship need get met?
Right.
Because for many business owners, their employees, their customers, their vendors, even their competitors are their friends. So where will your friendship need get met?
Or also to your point, that may be they're only acquaintances.
Correct.
You know, sometimes people will say, you know, they're my friends. I'm going, are they really your friends or your acquaintances? Because it's I've seen this with people in positions within the government. And once they lose a position, Speaker of the House, Mayor, you know, Governor, they're a little bit lost. As one of my friends said, he talked about somebody he knew who was a high official in the federal government. The high official said, I knew I was no longer someone of significance when I got the back seat of the car and nobody was driving it. You know, while you have that business position, you are someone. You take that away and do you have that same relationship? I got to be honest with you. Most people, more often than not, it's no, unless you rekindled it for some other way or for other purposes.
But it's important to do that. I mean, we can see that even in, we'll just look at pop culture, right? Recently, we saw Serena Williams take a step back from her tennis career, or Roger Federer, or we saw Tom Brady do it. And then, just kidding, I'm back in. Do we really think that Tom Brady's return to play football was about the money?
No.
No. It probably wasn't even about the game. What it really was about are the things we're talking about today, which is what else does playing football provide for that man, and how else will he get them met? And the reason why I think it's so important to really map this out and have lots of different answers is work right now is meeting a lot of those needs. It is unlikely that an owner will find one thing that meets all of those needs again. And so it is important to say, where will I get my friendship and my power need met? Those two things probably don't go together.
Right.
Right. So a business owner who comes home and decides to reorganize the pantry for their spouse, how's that going to go? Maybe not so good.
Well, like my wife said, she married me for breakfast and dinner, but not for lunch. So no, it's not going to go well. But this leads to an interesting thing that I've always thought about, and I feel for guys because I believe most men tie their significance to their business. And without that, I mean, that it could be, God, I don't know, 80-90%, you know, of who they are. So instead of, I use the words with people say, instead of retiring, we need to rewire.
Yes.
Okay. Because we got to have a place to go forward. But I juxtaposition that statement with this question to you. Is the same true for women? Because it seems like they, more often than not, have already expanded their parameters, you know, much, much sooner. Well, I should say they've always had expanded parameters so that they could take the business out of the equation. They have family and friends and things that will soak up their time. Or am I kidding myself?
I think it happens for both genders. And what I think is, let's talk. Can I toss another story in to give
please,
an example?
Please,
for
absolutely.
It?
Thank you. Yes.
This particular client, and you know, as folks, as you're listening to these stories, it's not about the dollar amount. It's not about the age of the person. Truthfully, the emotional issues that an owner goes through are the same, whether we are talking about a $50,000 hair salon or a $500,000 manufacturing company. For a business owner, this fills a lot of needs. So this particular owner had an $85 million manufacturing company. 8 weeks before the closing, he suddenly announced he would not take a penny less than 9x EBITDA.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind that the deal was at 6.2x EBITDA. And so when he made this announcement, the investment banker and the lawyer were really all up about it, and you're going to get sued and you can't do that, and this is a good deal. And then he stopped taking their calls.
Right.
And so he had gone into hiding. The investment banker called me and said, I think my client went crazy. I'm like, yeah, sounds like it. Let's see if we can figure out what scared him and what hidey hole he went into, and can we coax him back out? So I had a conversation with him, and what I learned is that his original plan was to sell the business, buy a sailboat, sail around the globe. You can get a pretty good boat for $85 million. So this is probably not about the money.
The boat, yeah.
And as I dug in a little more with him, what I realized is 2 weeks before he asked for this unicorn of more money, his wife said, I'm not doing that. Right. I do not want to be stuck on a boat with you far away from my grandkids. Heck no, that's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, really, Dave, is he going to come back and tell the deal team that the deal is off because his wife won't let him do what he wants to do? No, he
not is so
not.
Much.
Instead, he asked for something, more money, yep. that yep. no one could provide, so that when the deal fell apart, it would not be about him. So what I did was some one-on-one work with husband and wife separately, and then I mm-hmm. brought them back together. And we did a solution where he would buy the sailboat and sail. And every 6 weeks, she would take one grandchild, fly to where he was. They do 2 weeks on land, building memories with the child. Then she would fly home and he would sail on. Boom. Our deal was back on track, closed on time at its original asking price, because it was not about the money. What was it about?
Did you get a success fee?
No, we're not going to talk about fees. I actually don't work on a success fee. I'm happy to talk about it. I work on a fixed amount.
Okay.
Because I want my objectives to be aligned with the owner. I don't ever want an owner to think that I'm only giving them advice to do something because my success depends upon it. I am
on
invested.
Your page.
In making the right decision. And long ago, I decided not to work on an hourly basis, because what I learned is that when an owner is most emotionally unsettled, they are also the most cost conscious.
Yep.
And I did not want to be in a place where an owner didn't come forward with something that they needed to talk about because they were worried about it. This is going to cost me an hour of time. So I chose to do that differently.
Smart. Very smart.
And it also allows me to move seamlessly throughout the deal team, because sometimes the chaos or the uncertainty that is there is from another member of the deal team. It might be two lawyers who are arguing over something that isn't actually yes. about the deal. Or yep. it might be the investment banker who got scared that his commission was about to evaporate. So I am moving seamlessly throughout the process, handling the emotional things that are happening. So if we come back to what was happening for that couple, because sometimes I'll hear someone say, well, why didn't the wife speak about that earlier? Okay, Dave, you've been married a long time?
Yes, ma'am.
And the reason is because neither you or your spouse get all up about something the first time you hear it. You're like, that might not even really happen. Maybe I'm not going to raise my objections right up front because Dave might not actually do that. So it makes sense that his wife, it was very late in the process before that objection came up. Now, candidly, I think the advisors missed out because they were so focused on only the transaction and only the business owner that they lost track of who else is impacted by this. And they do this thing. I just was involved in a LinkedIn conversation about this earlier this week, where someone talked about how, you know, a spouse raised an objection at the last minute. And I said, why wasn't anyone talking to her in advance? Why was she not part of this? And they said, well, you know, we asked. No, you did not ask. And if you did ask, you didn't ask it in a way that you really made it safe for her to say what was true. Instead, it was that it's the equivalent of that same checklist, right? Oh, are you going to play golf and travel? Cool. You have a plan. This is about being more emotionally present with what's going on in the transition that the owner and their family are undergoing. We, as professionals, we can often get hung up on the transaction. To the owner, this is not a transaction. This is the single largest transition in their adult professional life. And when we attend to the transition, the transaction goes more smoothly. So bringing this back into this story that we're talking about with our fellow with the sailboat, I'm going to use an example about another transition that happens in our life so we can see the parallel. What do we call it when the last child leaves home?
Hey, I'm sorry. All the memories just went flowing back through my mind. It's where I cry and my wife's looking at me like, why are you emotional about the whole thing? When we become empty nesters and all of a sudden it is very quiet and you've never had that much quiet before.
Correct. And we know it as empty nest syndrome. We have language for it. And typically families don't go through that alone, right? Parents, when your last child leaves home, you're going through this with the parents of your children's friends or other neighbors. And because it is a cultural transition that happens, we know about it and we know how to care for people and we don't shame them when you're like, I feel lonely that they're not here. We're like, yeah, of course you do. Or when you come back to the table the first time you drop them off at college and you have four plates and now there are only three people eating dinner. We normalize this and we know it as that. So this couple with the sailboat, they were going through two things. One is called relational grief. It's what happens when you realize the kids are out of the house and you're like, oh, who are you? I don't know you. I don't
you
even
have to get remarried again.
You, right?
Because absolutely.
For many years, we have been saying, when the kids are gone, when the business sells, we will do X, Y, Z. But our lives may have drifted. And so the business is the last child that leaves home for many business owners.
Yes. I have often said to your point that with a lot of people, they have a lot of carbon-based children, okay? Yeah. But then there is a legal-based child.
Yeah.
And the question becomes, are they all equal? One more than the other? One, you know? And it's all, you know, guys, I'm not really deciding if it's good or bad. I'm not being in judgment. I just want to deal with the issue.
Right. And it is sometimes the reason why an adult child does not want to go into the family business because they're like, no, that was always the favorite child. And I have resentment about that. I don't want it.
Right.
But what we're talking about with a business owner letting go is they are confronted with these empty nest moments, the identity moments, and they're perfectly normal. But what if we began making this a normal part of what we talk to our clients about as advisors? And we begin to prepare them at the beginning. Yes, this is an emotional process. I sometimes hear advisors, you know, jokingly say, I'm part therapist because my client treats their business like a baby. I'm like, yeah, they do. And how about if instead we became skillful guides through this emotional part instead of trying to make our clients not be emotional about it? It is emotional.
This conversation with Denise was so interesting and going so well that we talked for well over an hour. To hear the rest of our conversation about the emotional journey of selling a business, the oh my syndrome, and what really kills business deals, and no, it's not time. Well, it is some of the time. But more importantly, I'd ask you to listen to part two of a conversation to get a true feeling about all that's involved in why business deals go bad. And to my listeners, if you're in search of assistance with any of the topics that we've discussed today or in any of the podcasts, go to davidsider.com and schedule a free consultation. And make sure, please, to subscribe to the show. Rate it and leave me a comment on your favorite podcast platform, such as Spotify or Apple. Thanks to Denise. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will see you next time. And I want you to know that this podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice, and it is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in the podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, business owners should consult with an attorney on their distinct circumstances.